been abused, struggling to forgive, then you need to hear from someone who's been there. Let's talk about it with Jennifer Greenberg on Steve Brown, etc.
He's an old white guy, an author, broadcaster, and seminary professor who's sick of religion. And he's brought friends. Please welcome Steve Brown, etc.
And we are so glad that you're here. I'm Steve, the aforementioned old white guy, our resident megachurch pastor. Zach Van Dyke is here. Zach, love Disney. Are you going to sign up for the Disney Netflix today?
Oh, man, I got up at 5 in the morning. I've already gone into the Disney vault today. I'm ready.
Which one did you get first?
We watched Peter Pan this morning.
Oh.
Excellent. Yeah, it was good.
Okay. I can't think of a more wonderful way, except maybe reading the Bible.
Okay.
Justin Hoagland has not yet appeared, but he will show with us. We'll plan this season of thanks. Justin is just thankful Halloween is over. No more people asking, where did you get that awesome priest costume?
It's a true story.
I wonder if he'll have that on today.
I'm going to borrow it next year for Halloween.
You should.
That's what I'm going to do.
You
awesome.
Should.
Yeah. Dress up as other pastors.
Yeah, right.
Matthew Porter is here. Last week, Matthew took his family to a theme park. That theme was criminally overpriced food. Always
true.
Complaining.
I mean,
these are your kids.
I know.
Your family.
But
is there any expense?
I feel like I'm in post-war Germany. You're like, how much for this turkey leg? 1,000 Deutschmarks. That sounds reasonable.
And our producer, Jinx, is working hard in the little glass booth. The ground control to my Major Tom.
Ah.
I have no idea what that means.
I'll cue it up.
Do you want to explain it?
It's okay.
You wrote it.
It's David Bowie.
Okay. That answers everything. I got it.
Do you know who David Bowie is?
No.
See,
it's less my generation.
I'm not even ordained, and I know who David Bowie is.
It's Jesus that's a problem, Jinx. I just want you to know.
Look, you stick to what you know, and I'll stick to what I know.
All right. The video director, John Myers, is in the tech bunker, and I'll hope he'll edit out all of which preceded this. And Kathy Wyatt is the soft feminine side of the program. She's told us that if we do a good show today, we get cupcakes afterwards.
That's true.
So everybody,
I made cupcakes for a party over the weekend, and there's a bunch of them left over. So
Are they stale?
No, they're not. They were in the refrigerator.
I'll still eat them.
Okay. Apple pie cupcakes.
Oh my!
Yeah.
Okay,
right,
guys.
Next to the moonshine.
Enough futzing around. Yeah. This is going to be a serious program. It really is. And I spent all morning with a serious book, and we're going to talk about it. Our guest is Jennifer Michelle Greenberg, is a Christian Texan. My mentor, who also was a Texan, abhorred using Christian as an adjective, but it was in your bio, so I will use it. And besides,
there's a comma there, Steve.
Well, he's dead.
She's a Christian, and she's a Texan.
Oh,
There's a comma there.
I didn't see the comma.
You got to.
I thought
executive
I was
producer,
have, you know,
make the commas bigger.
Duly noted.
Yeah.
And she's a stay-at-home mom of three who enjoys heavy metal and black licorice.
Oh,
awesome!
Jennifer's also a singer and a musician. Her music has been covered by Christianity Today, the Houston Chronicle, NPR, among others. And her new book, which I hold in my nicotine-stained fingers, is Not Forsaken, a story of life after abuse, how faith brought one woman from victim to survivor. Jennifer, we're so glad that you're here. And as I said, I spent the morning with this book. And I can't say it was a joyous morning. It was kind of a downer, but it was also profound. This is a wonderful book, by the way. Matthew and I were discussing it a little bit earlier when he came in scripts, and I'm so glad you wrote it. There is a basic humility and authenticity in you, and you get grace. I don't smell self-righteousness about you, and there ought to be a lot there, but I see such clarity and insight in this kind of book. Why don't we start with your story?
Sure.
You're never really specific about things, but you're clear. So tell us about where you come from.
Sure. Yeah, I am the survivor of over 21 years of abuse. That would be domestic violence, sexual abuse, emotional abuse, spiritual abuse. And this was all at the hands of my father, but there were also several pastors and other people in my life who were abusive in various ways. And so that took up the entirety of my childhood. So you've got child abuse as well. And I didn't really realize that I had been abused until I got married and was living with a godly man. And realized by contrast, looking at the way Jason treated me, his interest in my feelings, my hobbies, his passion for building me up and caring about me. So I learned by contrast, because I was now living with a godly man, how ungodly my father had been. And that was really shocking to me. You know, I'd always known that my dad had issues. I knew that the way I grew up wasn't normal, but I hadn't put the abuse tag on it. You know, just I think I knew subconsciously, but I hadn't really faced it.
Did you, I realize that, are you in any kind of relationship with your father now, or is that totally over?
Totally over. We actually, our last conversation, at least the last one that I recall, we were talking on the phone and I told him, I said, Dad, look, I have two choices. I can either believe that, you're crazy and you didn't know what you were doing and you still don't get it, or you're evil and you knew exactly what you were doing and you now refuse to repent or change. And he was quiet for a few seconds, and then he said, well, I'm not crazy, so you're just going to have to accept that I am evil.
Wow.
And at that point, I realized that I couldn't fix this person.
Yep.
I didn't have any influence over this person, and I told Jason about it. And he contacted my dad and basically said, look, you can't talk to her anymore. No more phone calls, no more gifts, no more visits. Nothing, until Jennifer decides to reach out to you. If Jennifer decides to reach out to you, you may not contact her. So, and that it was a struggle, but I had to come to a point where I realized that having him in my life was damaging. He was causing so much depression and anxiety. It was affecting my marriage and my spiritual life. I couldn't spiritually grow when I was so bogged down with that abuse.
You're profoundly Christian. I was kidding about the Christian Texan kind of thing, but you really are. You smell like Jesus. I don't know how that happened. I'd be a Buddhist. I'd be maybe an agnostic, but so, with the pastors and your father reading Burkhoff and the religious stuff that was always so built into it, you might want to tell us of the incident when God spoke, but I mean, there's got to be more to it than that. How did you remain a Christian and how can you walk into a church?
It's totally God. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. If God were not in charge of maintaining my faith, if he were not sovereign and if he were not in control, keeping my faith alive, keeping my hope alive. I wouldn't be alive right now because I'd have probably committed suicide about 5 times. It's been a difficult journey and a long journey, but really what it comes back to is, you know, the Lord is my shepherd and he has led me through the valley of the shadow of death and he has sustained me.
This is an amazing book for a lot of reasons, and one of them is right there where Jennifer was talking. This is a faith builder. I mean, it's a book that's shocking. You're going to think about it the rest of your life. You're going to be a better person because you read it. And maybe if you're an abuser, you'll jump off a building or something, which would be a positive. But you and I, listen, I'll have to repent of that before I go to bed tonight. But it felt good to say after reading your book.
An old millstone verse.
The book is Not Forsaken, the story of life after abuse, how faith brought one woman from victim to survivor. You don't want to miss a bit of this. Because this affects your life or the lives of people you know, the lives of people you love. And you need to know this. Not going to be a fun ride, but it's an important one. And if you go anywhere, you'll get the highs. Like Jesus, we're going to return, so don't go anywhere.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have 4 mini books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These 4 mini books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
You're listening to Steve Brown, Etc., and my guest is Jennifer Michelle Greenberg. Justin has just entered the building.
Without his collar. We were
we
taking bets.
We wanted you to have your collar.
You lost a cupcake on
that. It makes us feel kind of religious when you have your collar.
I have it under my shirt.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, show it.
Like Superman.
Like
ready.
Yeah.
Have it. Show it.
You have it like Jeez. Tattooed?
It's only when he fights crime.
He has it tattooed.
What you got in the back?
What I was saying before I so rudely interrupted myself is that we're talking to Jennifer Greenberg. And her book is Not Forsaken, Story of Life After Abuse, How Faith Brought One Woman from Victim to Survivor.
Jennifer, as believers, we know that God loves us. We know that Jesus died for us. And we get our... well, let me back up just a little bit. My father left before I was 2 years old, so I went for like 40 years and never saw him or whatever. And I never really thought much about whether or not the fact that I didn't have someone in that role, you know, in my home, how that affected my view of God as sure. Father. And I think I had to spend some time thinking about that after I met him and et cetera. I'm wondering, in a situation like what you've dealt with, which is has far more ramifications than mine, in a situation with someone that's dealt with multiple issues with abuse, how do you deal with the issue of the fact that, you know, God loves you, God is your heavenly Father, that he loves you? And how do people deal with that? How do they take that and try to make that work?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, I mean, growing up without a father, I mean, that's tremendously difficult. I wouldn't want to say that, you know, my pain was worse than yours, or I think that, you know, we all suffer in different ways, you know, like Paul says, we've got that thorn in the flesh. And one thing that really helped me, first of all, was realizing that God is angry at abuse. You know, God is love. He's a loving God, but he loves, you know, he loves righteousness. He loves justice. He loves his children. He does not love evil. In fact, God is angry with the wicked every day. And so once I realized that God was incalculably more angry at my dad's evil than I could ever dream of being, I was able to actually let my anger go and kind of trust God to be angry for me. You know, I even prayed it. I prayed, you know, Jesus, you took my sin to the cross. You know, that's a huge burden to bear. And I need you to give me faith that you can carry my anger too, because I can't deal with this. It's poisoning my heart. It's making me miserable all the time. And it's good to be righteously angry, to be angry over evil. It's natural. But at the same time, you can't pitch your tent in that and live there. You know, it's toxic.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I think that really helped me too was realizing that my dad's sin had absolutely no bearing on the holiness of God. No matter what horrible thing my dad did, no matter how evil human beings are, no matter how dark this world is, it doesn't affect how holy, loving, good, faithful, just God is. He is holy regardless of how evil or lost we are. And so separating that in my mind was very important.
That's really helpful. Yeah.
That's a hard, that's a disconnect. You know, I've had a number of women say to me, every time you say our father, mm-hmm. I wince because I think of mine. And you have made such a beautiful answer and helpful answer to how to do that.
Yeah.
Can I jump in on her? This is Justin, by the way.
Hey, Justin.
Hey.
Good to if he's here, he would talk. Have been here on time.
Yes.
Jennifer, I just want
to
know.
I don't care about this topic at all. you are giving people a gift by talking about anger. And some people are going to hear you talk about God being angrier than you are. So it gets mm-hmm. you off the hamster wheel of revenge, but you still get to pursue justice. And so some people think anger is a sin.
And
so that's going to be a barrier for some people. So can you just say like maybe 30 seconds on how anger is not just not a sin, but we're actually called to be angry.
Ephesians says, well,
you know, be angry, but in your anger, don't sin. That's a distinction.
Exactly. Be angry and do not sin. And you know, Jesus got angry and he flipped over those tables in the temple when he saw money changers abusing the people of God, abusing their trust, abusing their convenience. And so, you know, abusing his temple. So Jesus is angry at abuse. And if you're going to call anger sin, then you're calling Jesus sinful. And I think that's, you know, we really need to be very careful that we never dare do that, because that's a terrible thing to say.
Wonderful. I just want to make sure people didn't blow past that and get caught up, because you gave them the gift of anger. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah. And Jen, I feel like if you downplay the anger part, you're taking away from the power of what the forgiveness is. You know, the forgiveness can still be coinciding with that. But if you're like, oh, you know,
No big deal.
Walk it off. Like you said, making a molehill out of a mountain, then you're taking away from the beauty and the power of what forgiveness really is. So the question I had is, earlier you said that essentially there is no extant relationship now between you and your father, which sounds like the healthiest thing possible. But have you forgiven him? Was there a specific moment where you said, I choose forgiveness? And was that a moment? Was that a process? Was that all of the above?
It was all the above. So, you know, when you're recovering from abuse, you're going through a grieving process. You know, maybe a loved one hasn't died, but your relationship with them has. Mm. And, you know, in my case, I really feel that my dad was spiritually dead. And so I had to grieve him. I had to process, you know, losing my father. And that was a tremendous thing. And so, of course, I was angry that happened. And I was angry at the evil he had committed. And, you know, obviously I'm a sinner, but I also believe that much of that was righteous anger. However, I came to a place where I wanted to feel joy again. I wanted to have healthy relationships. I wanted to get to a place in my life where I wasn't stuck in that mire of anger. And, you know, I really just had to pray to God to enable me to forgive. It was a process, but you know, there's two different kinds of forgiveness that I outline in my book. There's boundary forgiveness. And that's when we let go of our anger, but we're still going to file that police report. We're going to maintain boundaries. We may even cut that abuser out of our lives, but we've processed our pain enough that we've reached a place of peace in our hearts. And then of course there's reconciliatory forgiveness where the abuser is, thank God, by the grace of God, has repented, and we're able to reconcile eventually with them.
We're talking with Jennifer Greenberg, and her book is Not Forsaken. And by the way, you can follow her on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Jen, JennMGreenberg. There. It's done.
Did you just spell Greenberg?
I don't know.
You went a long way around on that.
We're all adults. You don't have to spell it.
I'm old. I'm doing the best I can. In fact, I'm going to rest up and have some milk and cookies in return.
From Key Life comes two mini books, What Do You Do for a Living? And Life After Retirement. What Do You Do for a Living by Justin Holcomb addresses the problem of defining ourselves by what we do and how we perform in our work instead of by who we know, a gracious, loving God who defines who we are. Life After Retirement by Steve Brown examines how those transitioning from work to retirement often experience a loss of purpose in life, and how the quest for personal significance can best be answered by God's radical grace, love, and purpose for our lives sufficient to carry us through this transition. What Do You Do for a Living and Life After Retirement can help guide people struggling with either work or retirement. These two Key Life mini books are available through keylife.org for a donation of $6.
Jennifer Greenberg, she's a great author, but she's also a pianist, classically trained vocalist, songwriter. She got a new album coming out. What's it called, Jennifer?
Symbiotic.
When will it be out?
I don't know.
Well, that was helpful.
Well, where could one go to find out?
To find out, check out Jennifer Greenberg. .net/music.
Yes. Yeah, I planned to release it along with my book, but just the whole process of releasing a book turned out to be a lot more than I anticipated, and so the album was put on temporary hold, but it is coming out.
All right.
Awesome. Jennifer, right before the break, you talked about forgiveness and then mm-hmm. reconciliation, and I want to ask about the third category of restoration. So an individual can forgive someone, whether they repent or not. You can forgive someone, and you're telling that story about forgiving. If the other person repents and apologizes, then as brothers and sisters in Christ, then there can be reconciliation. But restoration is the other category, which is you know, restoring the relationship back to what it once was before the fracture, before the sin, before the violation. And I think a lot of churches and individuals make people feel guilty for not restoring. Like, well, you may have forgave, you may have reconciled, but is it really legitimate if you don't restore things back to how they once were? And this plays out in ministries when someone's arrested for abuse and they go, well, we want to be a place of grace. Let's make sure we let that person run the children's ministry now. And the abusive grandfather gets full access to his granddaughters and grandsons again because, you know, it's not legitimate unless you restore it. So love to hear your thoughts on the category of restoration or restoring the relationship back to what it once was.
Absolutely. Well, I think a lot of it, you know, really it comes down to arrogance. You know, we are all sinful people. We are all capable of terrible evil. When someone has demonstrated that they are have a predisposition to a certain type of evil, there are consequences. And we would not be responsible parents, responsible church leaders, really responsible to Jesus Christ, if we were to allow someone who we know has particular temptations to be around small children, to be around the exact people that they are tempted to prey upon. It's just not responsible. You know, you wouldn't take a recovered alcoholic to a bar for their birthday. You just would not do that. It would be irresponsible. It wouldn't be nice to that alcoholic. And of course, so when you're talking about children, when you're talking about putting children at risk, not only are you talking about exposing a repentant abuser to things that they are tempted with, but you're also talking about making children, the lambs of Jesus Christ, vulnerable. And it's just not a responsible risk. And if we love God, if we honor God, then we're not going to put those children in that position.
So you're saying that the person who was abused, who felt called to forgive their abuser, and then the abuser realizes they sinned and apologizes and repents, that they've forgiven and there's reconciliation. And it's okay if they don't go back to the original form of the relationship that they once had.
Absolutely. Right? See, absolutely.
A lot of people feel guilt, like they didn't forgive right or they didn't reconcile right until they go back to it. And so the freedom that you give people who are hearing that is a wonderful gift. They're allowed to not go back and feel the pressure like they need to just forgive.
Yeah, this
forget
is not works.
Yep.
We do not have a religion of works. Forgiveness is not a works righteousness. It is a grace of God. But we still have a responsibility to God. And you know that thief on the cross, he repented, Jesus forgave him, but he still died on the cross that day. He still had those earthly consequences.
Dude, that's the illustration I'm going for from now on.
I like that.
You're forgiven, but you're still going to die.
Yeah, I've never.
And
heard
I'm going to help put the nails in there. Right.
Jennifer
you
said
perpetrator.
So.
I've never
boiled,
heard preached that way. That was good.
Me neither.
Boiled down to the theological essence of what Jennifer was saying, it's this: you're called by God to forgive, but he never called you to be stupid.
Mm. Yeah,
that's good.
And you know, that thief on the cross, he accepted his punishment. He didn't say, oh, well, Jesus, now that you've forgiven me, so let's take these nails out. Get me down from here.
Mm.
So a truly repentant person is going to accept responsibility for their actions. They're going to accept the consequences of their sin, and they are going to completely understand when people are distrustful of them. If they don't understand why you're distrustful, why you're afraid, why you're hurt, they don't understand the gravity of what they've done. They cannot possibly be genuinely repentant.
Wise words.
Wow.
Zach, you got a question. You maybe can pose it, and then we're running out of time on this segment.
Okay.
And we know what's important.
It's time to ponder it.
Yeah, yeah.
Selling product.
Yeah.
So you you might want to pose the question, and we'll talk about it on the other side.
Great. Well, Jennifer, first of all, thanks for writing this book. I think it's going to be so helpful not only to people who have suffered abuse, but I think everyone should read it just so that we can better understand what people go through. And one of the things that struck me from the very first segment, I'm going all the way back to the first segment, you said you did not know that you were being abused, or you hadn't put that label on it until you got in a relationship with a godly man. So I assume there are people listening to this program who are in abusive relationships and they do not know it, or they have not labeled it that way. So maybe on the
100%.
Other side, you could tell us some things that would maybe help someone see what the situation I'm in is not right. And God is not pleased with this, and I don't have to take this anymore. So maybe you could do that on the other side.
Don't you dare go anywhere, because we're going to talk about that on the other side of the break. I love the story about a man who owned the only hair salon in a small town. Made a good living until big business came to town. Across the street from his little shop sprang up one of those franchise operations. They advertised everything for $6. $6 haircuts, $6 perms, $6 manicures. The owner of the little salon started to lose customers. You know what he did? He put up a sign in his window that read, "We fix $6 haircuts." God does that too. If you went and blew it big time and got a cheap haircut from the world, go to him. His grace and unconditional love will fix it. I'm Steve Brown. You think about that. Hey, share what you just heard with a friend. Go to youthinkaboutthat.com. Guys, this is a great book, and you need to get it. And you not only get it, you need some study groups in your church to read it. It's so good, and it's so practical and right on. The title of the book is Not Forsaken, The Story of Life After Abuse, How Faith Brought One Woman from Victim to Survivor, Jennifer Michelle Greenberg.
So on the other side of the break, Jennifer, I was saying how I haven't been able to move past the first segment where you talked about being abused for 21 years, and then you listed, you know, sexual and physical, and I mean you went through kind of so much abuse, but that you never identified as being abused or a victim until you got in a marriage with a godly man, and so I know. Statistically, there are a lot of people who are suffering abuse who don't ever come forward, don't ever mention it. But then I guess even hearing you talk, people live in abusive situations and not realize that it's abuse. And maybe part of that is the church's fault because maybe we've minimized it. Maybe we've talked about, you know, you've got to stay in a marriage because God hates divorce. And, you know, like we've made it really hard to come forward. But if someone's listening and they're in an abusive situation right now, and maybe they don't know it, they haven't given it that word, could you maybe just kind of talk through some things that would maybe help someone see that that's the situation they're in?
Simple question. Does the person who's harming you remind you of Jesus? Do they remind you of Jesus?
Wow.
That's it. That's really it. Hmm. You know, when someone is not building up our faith, not pointing us to Christ, but rather is causing us to doubt, causing us to fear, making us feel like we can never be forgiven, like we can never measure up, like we'll never deserve their love, they're hindering our faith. And that right there is a serious sin.
Mm. So as a follow-up with that, if someone realize, you know, someone's like, "Oh man, yeah, this is the situation." What advice do you give to people that that abuse survivors come to and share? You know, I know as a pastor, this happens to me sometimes in my office, and I don't want to say the wrong thing. What kind of advice do you give to those who would maybe hear these stories, especially that initial, you know, the initial reaction? Like what is it a survivor or a victim really needs in that moment?
You know, so often I think that, you know, whether you're talking about, you know, verbal abuse, emotional abuse, or something that's just downright criminal, domestic violence, sexual abuse, the first thing I think you want to do is to get other specialists involved. Mm. You know, in the case of, say, verbal abuse, you want to involve a therapist, a counselor, you know, and of course, if you're talking about any kind of criminal or potentially criminal, you know, sometimes there's a gray area where you're not sure whether or not something is criminal or not. Just report it to the police. You know, it's as simple as that. So be there for that person, go with them to report it. I think a lot of times, you know, for me, for example, I had a stalker when I was in college, and this guy, he never laid hands on me. But he would follow me around pretending to talk on a cell phone, and he'd say really obscene things. And he followed me from class to class to class, so he knew my schedule, and it was freaking me out. And so Jason, actually, this was like the first week I met Jason, my husband, and he picked me up at, I think it was like 7 in the morning, and drove me straight to the police station and said, we're just going to report this. And the police were stunned, and they said, you know, this guy, he hasn't committed a crime yet, but he fits the profile for a serial rapist. And so wherever you go on campus, here's, you know, your personal police officer's phone number. You call him. We will come pick you up wherever you are, day or night. We're giving you a restraining order for this guy. But I would never have gone to the police by myself, never in a million years, because, you know, I just happened to mention this to Jason, and he realized that it was out of line. And so he drove me to the police station. So, yeah.
Good advice.
A question to you, Jennifer, and Justin as well. I interviewed a woman one time. She had a different kind of abuse growing up, and she was hurt because looking back, she was saying there were so many signs of abuse that people, at a certain point, you have to understand they're willfully ignoring. What are some of the signs that, you know, should be on our radar, that we should be tuned into if we see this or this or this? Maybe it's not a conclusive thing, but you need to kind of focus your attention on it.
I think for me personally, in my life, I always tried to be the ideal daughter. I tried so hard to be a good girl because I was told by my abuser that if I was really, really good and didn't complain and didn't and honored my father, and basically what that meant was don't embarrass him by telling all his dirty secrets, that my abuser, maybe he would see Jesus in me and that he would change and he'd come to love me like a good Christian daddy should. And so I had this tremendous works mentality, and I tried so hard. You know, I read all the books, I prayed, and ironically, I think that, you know, that helped stabilize my faith, but it was such in such an unhealthy way. And, I don't know. I turned out to be an overachiever because of that. You know, I was an overachiever. So it's not just the kids who, you know, have black nail polish, who are cutting themselves, who are, you know, depressed, smoking cigarettes, whatever. Those are all huge red flags. But it's also the kids that try really, really hard to be good. And so, you know, just get to know the kids in your church, get to know the people around you, and, you know, be a loving person so that if and when they're ready to talk, they can come to you.
Anything?
Well, some of the big categories, if someone is being belittled, silenced, especially in public, I'm surprised how many times I see an abusive husband show his hand when, you know, you're out to dinner and he's like, hey, and he just cuts his wife off or belittles her, makes fun of her.
Oh, wow.
Any type of bullying, the emotional kind of bullying, the guy who lives and tries to get into his wife's head or girlfriend's head or children's head, that kind of stuff. So there are there's those types of signs. And looking at the effects on other people is the other one. You know, anxiety and depression, some of those are triggered.
Insomnia.
So there's some symptoms in the survivor.
Jennifer.
Just ask questions,
We're at the end, and this has gone fast. And you're a delight, by the way. And obviously, we've only scratched the surface. We've just touched on some of these issues. And you can't go much further than we have on this broadcast. So that places before you the incumbent of buying this book, Not Forsaken, A Story of Life After Abuse. And you'll be glad you did. Jennifer, thank you for taking some time out of a busy mom's life and spending it with us.
Thank you,
Steve. Can do it again. God bless you, girl.
God bless you, too. I would love that.
Guys, we're going to come back in a short segment and tell you the person to whom we're going to do it unto next week.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have four mini-books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini-book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These four mini-books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini-book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
Man, heavy hour. I spent the morning with his book. It was a heavy morning, too. You know, we don't talk about these things because they're very uncomfortable. They're uncomfortable for me. Some of us are upset that all of a sudden we're talking about this kind of stuff. Listen, I am so glad that there is an increased sensitivity. And Justin, you've had a big part in that too, with your book and your wife's book and your involvement in this movement. It really is healthy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's surprising. Our book came out about 10 years ago, and Dan Allender was the only one that had a book out before then, Wounded Heart, whatever it's called,
yeah.
That book. And we wrote ours because that was for victims of child sexual abuse. We wrote ours for sexual assault. And then to see both the Me Too, Church Too movement, and then when you have someone like Russell Moore of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission from the Southern Baptist doing a conference on this, when you see denominations like the PCA doing – task force on pursuing thoughts on this and how to minister well. Like, it's actually a thing. I never would have dreamed that the kind of evangelical church would be addressing this issue as much as it is. There's plenty of work to do. We can sit around and be cranky about that. But so much, and the fact that you have like people like you know, this book coming out and that this is going to be read by thousands of people. And the resources that are out there. So it's amazing to see the what's happened in the past decade or so. And that's really because of, you know, Allender really kind of made it okay to actually talk about it.
You know, when I read Dan's book, and Jack, this was before you were born, I sat there and wept. And I haven't been abused. I haven't been an abuser. But, man, it was so powerful, and I realized, and we had Dan come to our church right after he wrote the book, and the place was jammed, and the stories were so surprising. So we did a good thing today, but we're not next week, okay?
Okay.
I mean, once in a while.
Okay.
You're gonna get a right-wing conservative, right?
No.
I didn't think so.
Actually, if you want to get ticked off about it, you can direct your anger to Zach,
because
Zach is the one who actually made me aware of this. His name is Daniel Hill, and his book is called White Awake, An Honest Look at What It Means to Be White. And Zach was reading the book, and so I said, hey...
Steve, I like this guy, so be nice next week, okay?
I will be nice. Okay. I'm normally nice. I'm warm and fuzzy and gentle and generous and kind.
And it's time to go.
Yeah. See you next week. Don't do anything we wouldn't between now and then. Goodbye.